Earners, what's up? Look, I want to give y'all a little peek behind the curtain of producing Earn Your Leisure. It's a lot more than just sitting down and chatting. It involves meticulous planning, recording, editing, and then promoting each episode to ensure it reaches all of you. And if you picked up any of our merch, then you know there's a whole extra layer of logistics from inventory management to shipping. Running a podcast is like running a small business. And speaking of business, I know many of you entrepreneurs are involved in e-commerce. You understand how crucial it is to streamline operations and cut costs wherever possible. That's why I want to talk to you about ShipStation, the multi-carrier shipping solution that integrates seamlessly with all your online sales channels. It's all about optimizing your shipping, connecting with expert partners, and freeing up more of your time to focus on scaling your business. Now let's talk about our experience with ShipStation. This tool has been a game changer for us, especially with automating routine tasks. Being able to manage everything from one dashboard and print shipping labels with just a click, absolute lifesavers. Plus, the discounts we get on shipping costs are incredible. Honestly, it feels like we're saving thousands. And as our show and merch sales have grown, ShipStation's robust automation and reporting features have helped us keep up without missing a beat. For those of you who get overwhelmed by order volumes, ShipStation's easy-to-use dashboard is a dream come true. You can import orders from any sales channel, apply shipping preferences automatically, and handle customer service issues right there. Not to mention the savings with up to 89% off carrier rates like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's no wonder over 130,000 companies stick with ShipStation long term. So, are you ready to turn your shipping challenges into growth opportunities? Head over to ShipStation.com and use promo code EARN for a free 60-day trial. Again, that's ShipStation.com, promo code EARN. Start streamlining your shipping and scaling your business today. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need, without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/EarnYourLeisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/EarnYourLeisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
I read based on it, right? All the caps of silicone. They actually said that because you use more material, it actually might be a disadvantage for swimmers.
That's the thing. Like, we just wanted people to have the option.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We weren't saying that, yo, like, everyone's going to go and buy a soul cap and use that at the Olympics.
Right.
That wasn't what we were saying. But what we were saying is actually we wanted people, if you're a competitive swimmer, we wanted you to have the option.
My graduates from my school being Forbes,
bag drop.
A mic drop, bag drop.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, UK.
Yeah.
Division. This has been a great, great run in the United Kingdom, London, Europe. We went to France. First and foremost, shout out to everybody in London.
Yeah.
Shout out to everybody that came to our event. Sorry for anybody that didn't get in the event.
Yeah, yeah.
But we are coming back and we're going to do something way, way bigger.
That's a fact.
To accommodate everybody in a much more suitable situation. But this episode is going to be a dope one. First of all, shout out to my guy, Jack Jones, who we actually talked to a few days ago and who I've connected with years ago.
Yeah.
And
solid dude.
Super good dude.
Yeah.
Super good
sharp.
Dude. Yeah. So he referred me to one of his good friends, Tox Ahmed Salahuddin, who, did I say it correctly?
Yeah, you said it good.
Who actually is a very, very interesting story. So he's an entrepreneur from London, from Nigeria originally, but
Lagos.
Grew up in London. Yeah. And it's a very interesting niche business where they do swim caps. So it's called Soul Cap. Mm-hmm. So how it really got a lot of attention on like a global scale is that I believe it was banned from the Olympics, right? So we'll talk about this whole thing, but it's a very interesting concept and idea where it's not just for women though, right?
No, it's not.
But that's like where it became
that
like,
was kind of
that was a narrative on it, right?
Exactly.
So like black, well, you could speak about it better.
Yeah. No, I think it's dope, like, because we've obviously highlighted a lot of black brands.
Yeah.
And when I heard your story, it reminded me of the Eastside Golf story, where there was a sport that blacks were kind of excluded from.
Yeah.
Right? And swimming is one of those sports as well.
Yeah.
Like, I think Reuters reported that out of the 73,000 registered swimmers, competitive swimmers, like 650 are black.
It's crazy.
And so it's like, this is not something that we're doing. And a lot of the reasons, especially with our women, is the hair.
Yeah. Definitely.
So like you guys come into a space and it's like, okay, let's make this an inclusive thing. So I think it's going to be an interesting topic. It's going to be a great episode for sure.
Yeah, it's a swim cap that's made for, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody, but like for black women's hair.
Yeah, afros, weaves, dreadlocks, braids, extensions.
And that's not something that like a regular swim cap can't really accommodate that situation of op. So it's one of these things where it is a very niche product, but it's widely used.
Yeah.
It's like something that you don't really think about too much, but if you go swimming, you know, you wear swim caps, especially on a competitive level.
Absolutely.
Especially women, especially black women.
Yeah.
Who don't want to get their hair wet. So, black-owned business out of London. Very interesting conversation I'm sure we're going to have. So, first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, guys. Appreciate that.
Nah, for sure. So, all right. Let's get this going. How do you... Because you actually come from an actuary background, right?
Yeah, exactly. So an actuary.
Are you still doing that now?
I'm still doing it. I'm still an actuary. I still got my 9-to-5.
Lloyds of London?
Lloyds of London Syndicate, yeah.
So, Lloyds of London, probably the biggest insurance company as far as... Insurance, not how we look at it in America. Like, they insure, like, artwork. They insure pretty much everything. Like, a lot of, like, even football players in America in college, they got, like, Lloyds of London, like, disability policies. Like, anything that you can really think of, Lloyds of London insures it. One of the largest insurance companies in the world.
So I think Zion Williamson had that after he had sprained his foot at Duke. He had an insurance policy in the Lloyds on.
Yeah. So, but you're an actuary.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm a qualified actuary. I'm a fellow.
I know what an actuary is, but can you explain to the people who might not know what an actuary is?
Essentially, you know, the day job, what it is that I use like maths and statistics to try and calculate risk, essentially. So if I can work out if I can price a risk, or I can work out how much I think, you know, a particular policy might cost us, and then I can work out essentially how much we need to charge so we can like make profit, essentially pay all the bills, expenses, and that kind of stuff. And then also the other side of it is how much money you need to hold in reserve as an insurance company in case things go wrong. So high level.
Yeah, it's the math side of it, and that's something that a lot of times people don't understand how insurance is priced. Mm. But when you look at the actuary, like let's take life insurance. They'll look at how many people die in a particular year, how long people live, how many people get a policy, and it's all one big math equation. And then they can say, okay, for a $100,000 policy for a preferred rate, it's going to cost $150.
Exactly.
It's not just a random number that's thrown out there. It's actually done through
actuarial
math equation. So you must be a very... very smart guy.
Brilliant young man.
When it comes to the math work.
Nah, man.
Algebra. You passed algebra. I never passed algebra.
You could if you wanted to. You could, definitely.
All right. So that's your day job.
Yeah.
But when do you decide to become an entrepreneur?
So to be honest with you, like me and my business partner, Michael, like even from young, we've always been kind of on the business thing, always trying to like, you know, make little hustles and stuff like that. And I think, you know, I was working in the city, and I just felt like, you know, I think about 26, 27 at the time. And we were like, oh, no, we need to get this side hustle popping. Like, we need to do something. We spoke about it, you know. around the time we were sort of dabbling in a bit of crypto, all that kind of stuff. And we were like, let's make a more sort of conscious effort to start a business. But nothing really popped to us. Nothing really kind of, you know, came to us that we thought, okay, cool, we could do this. And this is credible. And it's not overly competitive, but there's a big enough market and all that kind of stuff. And then sort of, you know, we both grew up not knowing how to swim, essentially. Yeah. And I don't know if the same goes for you guys, whether you can swim.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that a little bit, because so you're from Nigeria originally.
Yeah.
Lagos, right?
Yeah.
Shout out to Lagos. So I'm not sure how it is on the continent of Africa, but in America, it's a very weird dynamic where majority of black people don't know how to swim. Yeah. And it's become like a whole stigma of black people don't swim. Like, you'll see like these memes where it's like a white pool party and like everybody's in the water. A black pool party, nobody's in the water. Everybody got jean shorts on. Like, they're not even thinking about going in the pool.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you start a swim company, because a lot of black people can't swim.
Yeah.
You can't swim.
We couldn't swim. As adults, you became swimmers.
That was it. So for us, that's how it kind of went. It was a bit magical in ways, the way it happened. So like, me and Michael grew up not knowing how to swim, right? My mom can't swim. Michael's mom can't swim. I grew up with two older sisters. They can swim, but they didn't really, because of the hair issues and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we were like 26, 27. We were like, you know, we should learn how to swim. You know, it's limiting.
Just
know?
In case.
Even, you know, not even the necessary, just the drown prevention side. But at them times, we were thinking, you know, you go on holiday, people are all like, you know, jumping into cenotes and stuff. Off the boat, all that. And we couldn't do it, you know. And we were like, no, we should actually learn how to swim. So obviously looked into it, got some adult swimming lessons.
So y'all decided to take class together?
Yeah. So we took
class. That's a real friendship, man.
Yeah.
If I said that, you'd be up for it?
I mean, we can swim,
but I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, there's lots out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just didn't really look for it. But again, like you say, it was the feeling that swimming wasn't for black people, really. You know, black people don't really swim. Like, you got, like, you know, when I was, you know, I was taught in school, essentially. We did school lessons, but I wasn't that good. And the teachers didn't really pay any attention. And if you couldn't, they kind of just sort of said, oh, okay, cool, like, forget them guys. And pay a bit more attention to the people who are good. So I did lessons, just never really took onto it. And I think because my family didn't encourage it, I didn't do it. Whereas maybe another family might have encouraged it more, you know. So anyway, we did these adult lessons. There was a woman in the swimming class, and she didn't have like a particularly big afro. She had just like a small kind of like, you know, afro classic, you know, hairstyle. And her swimming cap was just coming off all the time. Literally, her hair was soaked, like, you know, and we had weekly lessons. And she would say, it's obviously a faff, it's effort. She's got to go, she's got to wash her hair, the chlorine, it's damaging. Because she wanted to learn to swim, you know, she was willing to make that sacrifice. And then I think that was when it sort of clicked to us, like, hang on a minute, how come you don't get swimming caps that come in different sizes for different hair types, you know? When you often buy a swimming cap, you'll see it says one size fits all in the packaging, which isn't the case. So we looked into it, and we were like, no, there's nothing really out there. Like, that's like, there's definitely nothing out there credible. And this could be an opportunity. And because we were both on trying to hustle and trying to find, you know, little side things, we were like, why not? Let's give it a go.
Yeah, I've been through that, man. Like, my daughter was in swimming, and it was always the one size fits all.
Yeah.
And by the time she'd swam twice, either the cap would rip, because we would try to make sure her hair wouldn't get wet, or it would be the opposite. We put the cap on and her hair still got wet.
Yeah.
Just because it didn't fit.
Yeah. Right?
It didn't matter if I braided her hair or if she had her hair natural. But like you said, one of those reasons why we don't get in the pool, or black women for sure, is that the damage that it does to their hair.
So let's talk about, I'm going to ask you all the business questions, but for people that might not be fully educated, what is the issue with black women going swimming? Is it the chlorine that messes up their hair? What's the whole problem with that?
I mean, I think definitely that's a barrier. Like, that's something that, you know, discourages black women, I believe.
Because they get their hair done.
I think they get their hair done, and then they're thinking, if I want to go swim, my hair's going to get wet, and then it's going to ruin my hair. You know,
when you say ruin it, what does that mean? Like, it ruins it if it's straight, right?
Well, I think
if it's an afro, it's not going to get rolled.
But the chlorine, dries it.
Yeah, the chlorine dries it too. Has damaging effects. Yeah. On the hair. So there's that issue as well. And I think also, to be honest with you, us as black people, you know, you go swimming, and you come out, and your skin's all dry, and do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And all them kind of things. So I feel like, you know, there's a few different layers to it, but we definitely saw that the swimming caps was at least one of these barriers to entry for mm-hmm. people. And you know, I think when we first started the business, you know, we kind of just took a punt. We spoke to our moms, sisters, friends, and we were like, you know, would you, if you had a swimming cap that fit your hair, would you potentially go swimming? And they were like, yeah, you know, actually that is definitely one of the top reasons. It's not the only reason, but it's one of the top reasons why we wouldn't go. And we took a punt. And to be honest with you, like our first order, we always refer to it. We ordered 150 black XL caps and 50 burgundy, right? And I'll get into sort of the colors and stuff in a bit, but they just started selling. And it was the reviews and it was the feedback we were getting from the customers that really reaffirmed the fact that actually, like, this is, we've got something here, like, yeah. Onto something.
So when you ordered that, these are the prototypes, obviously. You're just looking at it like, all right, well, that one size fit all is not going to work. We'll get an XL. Or were you looking at actual texture like, all right, those are made out of silicone, we need to make it. Like, what was that process like?
Oh, yeah, exactly. So, you know, if I take a step back, the initial process was, you know, we were looking at the different sizes that were out there. Yeah. We were trying to research, okay, cool. If we were to launch a bigger cap, what kind of size would be a good size, you know? And we had to play around a lot, like did some testing with our sisters and stuff, looking at the materials, you know, okay, you get latex swimming caps. Like it goes deep, you get latex swimming caps, you can get neoprene swimming caps. And, you know, okay, keeping your hair dry was one of the key things. So neoprene was out of the picture. But latex, we found from the research was showing people can get like allergic reactions to it. Like people, you know, could have issues. So silicone just outstandingly seemed like the best material to go for. Mm-hmm. Non-toxic, you know, people don't have allergic reactions to it and stuff. So we went for silicone and yeah, and that was kind of like the early process. Yeah. Had a few prototypes, bunch of different samples, and we just tested and we thought, okay, that one size that we initially started with, we thought that hopefully will work for kind of like the early, you know, phase.
And most of the industry is made in silicone, right?
Yeah.
So it was like,
dominantly.
You didn't have to reinvent the wheel.
No, exactly.
Okay, they're using that.
That's it.
We're going to use that, but we're going to make our own interpretation or we're going to change the sizes of it.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That was it. And, you know, it's funny, like when we first started, we didn't really have money. Me and Michael, we started with £2,000. It's £2,000 to start a business, £1,000 each at the time. Obviously, it was a lot of money, but we were kind of like, we'll take the risk, we'll take a hit. If it doesn't work out, then, you know, kind of so be it. And yeah, we managed to order these 150 black caps and these 50 burgundy. And yeah, literally the reviews and the ratings we were getting from women who were like, oh, I wish I had this when I was growing up. If I had this, I would have, you know, swum, buying one for my kids, like so on and so forth. And then that was like, okay, cool. Now we need to keep pushing. We need to keep going, keep reinventing. Reinventing. And then from there, obviously now we've got like a broader range. So we've got like XL, double XL, medium and large. And we've also sell regular size swimming caps as well. Because so
you were doing a 9-to-5, right?
Yeah.
Michael's also doing 9-to-5.
So Michael's actually studying and he was working whilst also studying. So he was finishing university at the time.
Okay.
But he was also working at a bank. Yeah.
So you sold over 100,000 swim caps today, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. So you start with 2,000 pounds and that gets you, how much, 150?
150 black. And 50 burgundy.
So 200 caps.
Yeah, to start, yeah.
So what? All right. What exactly is the process? You had those made from scratch.
Yeah. So
you reached out to a manufacturer and said, look, we want swim caps, but bigger.
Yeah.
Is there any difference other than it just being bigger?
No, not really. To be honest with you, the opening. So the size of the opening, and also it's like when we're talking about bigger, the proportions are different from depending on
a normal
size cap. Yeah. So like, for example, like the opening, you can make the opening smaller or bigger. You can get the kind of size or the volume of the cap as well, okay. Bigger. So those were kind of like the two main parameters we had to play with.
So it's like a mushroom.
yeah, kind of.
So, all right. So you get that. You get the inventory in. What's the next step? How do you decide the price? How do you sell the first 200?
So for us, really, what we did, we kind of our initial strategy really was actually, we started out as like a FBA, Amazon FBA type approach.
Can you tell them if they don't know what that is?
Yeah, so basically what we do, we get the caps, we, you know, we find a manufacturer that we're happy with, we brand it, you know, so obviously SoulCap is our brand, we registered, you know, the company, trademarked, all that kind of stuff. Michael designed the packaging, and, you know, we're liaising with our factory in China. They basically make the products, they put it all together, like, and then we can get them to send it to us, and then we can send it into Amazon fulfillment centers. And then when we get orders, basically Amazon ship those products to the customer.
You know, because that's interesting, because we did an episode on Amazon selling probably 2 years ago.
What's going on, Ernest? Look, at 26, I made one of the most important decisions of my life. That's right. I didn't have family at the time, but I did have a life insurance policy. A wise man told me life insurance isn't about the people who die. It's about the people who live. It's one of the best ways to secure generational wealth for your family's future. And it makes perfect sense why people get life insurance, especially term coverage, which surprisingly is affordable. Why not pay a little bit each month to secure the future of the people you love long term? If you're asking yourself that question, I want you to check out Ladder. Ladder makes it impressively fast and easy to get coverage. You just need a few minutes and a phone or a laptop to apply. Ladder's algorithms work instantly, so you'll know right away if you're approved for coverage. No hidden fees, and you can cancel any time. And since life insurance costs more as you age, now is the time to get started. So check out Ladder today to see if you're instantly approved. Go to ladderlife.com/EYL. That's LADDER life.com/EYL. That's ladderlife.com/EYL. You know how this works. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Secure your family's future right now.
So what he was saying is, obviously yours is, you know, labeled, but he was saying there's a lot of products that you can sell on Amazon which you can white label. And he was like, nail clippers, nail filers, stuff. Nobody really ever cares who actually makes those, yeah. Right? You just go. And I'm thinking swim caps is kind of similar. Like, you have a niche thing where it's made for certain purpose, but
yeah.
Amazon would be a good place to sell that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you're literally just going online, typing in swim cap.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily just trying to buy like a specific brand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So there's not really a lot of like competition in the space.
That was it. I think for us as well, we knew that early on, like, trying to acquire customers for our own kind of retail website would probably be too expensive. You know, trying to go hard with the Google ads.
With the marketing.
And the Facebook ads and the marketing and that kind of stuff. And we felt like, okay, cool. If we can go through Amazon, people who are looking for a large swimming cap, or a swimming cap for dreadlocks, or a swimming cap for, you know, braids or long hair, and those kind of keywords, that hopefully they would come across our product and they would make that purchase.
So what was the, all right. So when you put it on Amazon, but you put keywords in there or in the description, how did you separate your product from the other swim caps?
Yeah, that was it really. I mean, the product description, like I said early on, you know, when we sort of first started, we didn't even have pictures of, you know, models using them. So when we first started, we got the caps, we sent them in, we had the packaging, cool. And we were like, okay, we need product pictures. You know, we ain't really got a big budget to get, you know, some big, you know, photo shoots going. So we sent them off to a product photographer, came back. Okay, what weren't great? Okay, do you know what? We think we need to invest the money and put some, you know, try and get some models together and stuff. So it was our very first photo shoot. It was, you know, it was an interesting experience, but we got some models who we thought, okay, this is someone with big hair, you know, voluminous. No one on Amazon was using black models at that time, yeah, in that category. No one. So we were like, cool, like, we want to actually get some black models, get some women who, like, you know, have long hair. We had men as well in that very first photo shoot who had, yeah, like, dreads and stuff. And we just, any money we were getting in from sales, even the little bit we were getting in, we were reinvesting back. Do you get me?
Gotcha.
So we were making sure, like, the photo shoot, cool, like, let's try and get a proper photographer. Let's try and get a proper, like, little studio unit. We had like a little container in Box Park. It was literally a container unit. Got a few models and stuff, and we just got some shots. And, you know, a lot of, I was like the person who kind of tried to, you know, creative direct it. It wasn't great, but we got a few shots in there. And to be honest with you, when we actually then had modeled pictures, that was when the sales really started coming consistent.
So the name SoulCap, I mean, it speaks to a specific demographic, right? When I hear that, I'm thinking, so I feel like that's black culture.
Yeah.
So who came up with the name? And then you said the colors three times already, but I'm trying to figure out in my head, like, all right, black and burgundy.
Yeah.
Why do we choose those two?
Okay, so the name, I'll have to take credit for that one. Michael will tell you.
It's okay.
As well. I take credit for the name. Yeah. I came up with it. I mean, to be honest, again, we were just trying to brainstorm a few names and we kind of just felt like Soulcap just had the feel, like you say, it's a feeling.
Yeah.
It's like, it just feels right. It embodies what we're trying to do, essentially. So we went with Soulcap and then the colours. So what it was for us when we first started, again, we thought, cool, if someone's going to wear a swimming, like, I think people, a lot of people don't find swimming caps cool. Definitely not at the time. Like, swimming caps weren't cool. Do you know what I mean? And people wear them because they're a necessity and so on and so forth. And we were like, okay, if we're going to launch a swimming cap, we want it to feel premium. We want it to feel nice. We want it to kind of look stylish. We don't want to, like, put some brash, you know, crazy branding, you know, like, with mad clip art, you know, right. logos on it and stuff. Do you know what I mean? We want it to just, like, look clean, look nice. So, you know, we worked to get the logo. We had the little branding. We were like, okay, cool. We just put the logo on it, nice. Black, because, to be honest with you, that's just safe. And I think feel like people would buy black in terms of the colour of the swimming cap. And some of the research that we had done shown that black was actually, like, a good colour to go with. And then we knew we wanted to launch additional colours and other variations, but we thought burgundy was just like, it just felt premium. That was really our feeling. Now, there's nothing really I can say on it, but it just felt premium and people loved it. We dropped it and people loved it. And those were the two first colours we launched. And then after that, we also dropped a navy and then we dropped like a kind of racing green. So it's like a deep blue and a deep green. Mm. And again, it's more just like a premium feeling. You know, I feel like if you go to a pool and you got a bright, I don't know, pink hat and your hat is enormous, it just may draw attention to you. And you may feel like, actually, I don't want it to just feel too brash and too in your face. So that's why we launched them colours. But then going speaking further on that, actually, as time has gone on, you know, and our community's grown and more people know about the brand, we get people who swim outdoors and they're like, oh, we love your product. We love your brand, but your colours are too dark for outdoor swimming. We need, you know, if you're swimming outside, you need bright colours, essentially. Mm. So then we launched an outdoor range where we got the bright, the pinks, the yellows, like the bright reds and that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
So, all right, when does it scale? So you start at 200, but eventually you get big enough to actually, you know, have a situation with the Olympics, which we'll talk about. But
yeah,
what happens in between then? What is the driving force to take you, you know, to success?
So really, it was mad. Like I said, I was obviously just 9 to 5, come home at like 6 or 7 p.m. and I'm just on FaceTime to Michael to like 10 or 11 o'clock every night. So I'm sat in my living room on FaceTime. He's sat in his bedroom or living room on FaceTime. And what we found is, okay, cool. We were getting some sales through. And early on, we didn't really have high expectations, but we just wanted to just keep pushing. So, you know, for example, trying to advertise. So putting a little bit of budget behind ads on, say, Amazon, for example. And then, cool, your product can start getting a better ranking. Amazon starts learning that people who are looking for large swimming caps are often buying your product. So then they push your product up the listing, up the ranking on the search term. And then I think the issue that we found was that we didn't have enough money to, like the business wasn't making enough money to meet the demand. And that was like one of the early like challenges that we faced, that, okay, cool, we got these 150 and 50 caps and they're selling out. And if we need to place a new order, we need to place it now. Otherwise, we're gonna sell out. So luckily, because I was still in the 9 to 5 and Michael had his bank job, we were like, cool, like, let's put some more money in. Let's just keep putting money in it, to keep propping up the business, to make sure we can stay stocked. So that was kind of how it started growing. And then essentially we started just in the UK, but then we were like, actually, let's launch this in the US as well. So that was when we kind of launched in the US, where again, like obviously the market is huge. It's like, on average, people say it's about 5 times the size of the UK market, say on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So we launched on Amazon in the US as well. And then that was when things...
Oh, there's a separate Amazon?
Yeah.
So, okay. So the Amazon, you started with just Amazon UK.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you went to Amazon US. Yeah. And same strategy.
Same keyword. Strategy.
So you never... But how do you sell now? On your website or through Amazon?
From website, predominantly, yeah.
So
website, but...
When did you transition to have enough traction to just start, you know, being a standalone brand?
That was it, really. So I think... you know, I mean, you can still buy our products through Amazon now as well. But we wanted to get to a kind of critical mass of the business We wanted to make sure, like, you know, the business was self-sufficient. So now the business can pay for its own orders. If we're running low or if we need to, like, launch a new product and stuff, that new product strain, the business can manage that. And then we had a website early on as well. But again, like I said, we weren't getting the traffic that Amazon was getting. Do you see what I mean? We weren't getting the traffic. Google wasn't ranking us high. You know, if you searched long hair swimming cap, Amazon products were coming up. They were like the first link. So that's, I think, one of the key things with, in my opinion, with e-com brands is like, either you've got enough budget to try and market hard and, you know, heavy social media, all that kind of stuff. You know, early on, it was just us doing the social media. So we looked at Amazon, really, because Amazon had the traffic. That's what helped push the business up. And there are ways and means, even with Amazon, to put your brand across. So, like, you know, making sure you're listing, obviously, the pictures, but then, like, telling the brand story within your listing. You know, people were like, cool, okay, this is Soulcap. You know, we get it. So then next time when people seen us, say, on Instagram, they were like, yeah, cool. Like, and I remember that brand. I see them.
Telling the brand story like in a bio, like a bio.
Yeah, exactly. So you can kind of like put, I know sometimes you might see on Amazon, you scroll down, you see the description and there's a bit more about the brand and stuff like that, founders and stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So once you get to your own website, now you're not having to pay a fee to Amazon because they're getting a percentage of every sale.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. So are you going to make more profit to put it on your website?
Exactly.
But in the early stages, how did we come up with pricing? Because that's key, right? Because there's a lot of competitors that sell these caps.
Yeah.
You actually, I'm assuming, have to use more material because the caps are a little bit larger.
Yeah.
So how did y'all determine pricing?
So for us, really, it was kind of just we wanted to do something. Like, we wanted to have, like, a margin which was reasonable, obviously, to help the product, you know, grow and all that kind of stuff. But then at the same time, something that was reasonable for the customer. You know, we didn't want to, if we were the only credible choice for the product, we didn't want people to have to pay through the nose for it, essentially. So we kind of did a bit of research. We looked around at what some of the other long hair swimming caps were selling for. And we kind of just pitched it around there, to be honest. Like you say, we wanted to be competitive, but also we knew that we needed the margins to come through. And then, you know, making sure that you basically got a sustainable business model, really. So that was it.
How much is your caps?
So you can get our caps for, like, I don't know if I should say pounds or dollars.
You can say pounds.
We're in London.
We can say both, actually, if you know the numbers for both.
You can get them for, like, 12 to, like, 18 pounds, you know, $16 so to, like, $23.
$18, yeah.
Okay. About
right.
So around that, yeah.
So what about, like, sales throughout the year? Are there high seasons, slow seasons? Obviously, the summer, a lot of kids are going to the swimming pool.
Yeah.
But in the colder months, those are specifically targeted for people who are competitive.
Yeah.
Like we said earlier, most of the people that we're trying to target aren't in competitive swimming.
Exactly.
So what do you guys do in those parts of the year?
Yeah, I think for us, you know, it's a funny one because actually December and January is usually quite busy because I feel like new year, new me, like, okay, I'm
trying something new.
Yeah, yeah, something new, learn to swim, which is great. And we love it. And obviously we just always try and encourage it. There's also a big movement for outdoor and wild swimming now in the UK and I think also in the US. So I feel like the crazy seasonality, obviously summer's always going to be the big peak time, but I feel like it has leveled out a little bit where people are actually getting more interested in sort of outdoor, wild swimming in the winter months and also the new year. So yeah, I don't know. I think I don't really know how we manage it, to be honest, but, you know, obviously for us as well, as a swim brand, like, we've been kind of making that move to just expand our product range as well, you know, expand our product offering and stuff. So
it's called God's plan.
So have you done any marketing? Paid marketing at all? Or
In terms of like
ads,
advertising?
Or yeah. Influencer?
So not really. So actually, I'll tell you what we did do, you know. Again, relatively early in our journey, we'd probably been a couple years in and we knew we were getting traction. And we came across a young lady called Alice Deering. And she was, you know, like a junior swimming champion. She won like a junior swimming championship in the UK. And she was basically the only person of colour who swam for Great Britain. And to that point, there was, you know, no woman of colour who'd gone to the Olympics representing Team GB. Mm-hmm. So we came across her story and, you know, it was nuts because we were kind of just pushing our thing. We started like marketing a bit more using social media, you know, trying to push our website a bit. And we came across her and we reached out and we were like, actually, do you know what? We want to try and support you on your journey because what she was doing was, you know, so it aligned very well. It was very synonymous with what we were doing. So we kind of struck up a bit of a sponsorship type, partnership type of arrangement where we could support her in her training and stuff for the Olympics. And then, you know, she could also like rock our product and like, you know, talk about it and stuff. So,
yeah. Okay. Cause in my brain, like there's like a lot of, especially in the States, I don't know how it is out here, but one of our friends has like a festival called Curl Fest.
Yeah.
You ever heard of it?
Yeah. I've heard of it. Yeah.
And it's like a whole movement of like natural hair. So I'm thinking maybe partnerships with something like that would, cause that would be, you know, hand in hand. Cause it's about hair already.
Exactly.
So it's a natural fit to be like, okay, now if you want to go swimming, this is the product that you should be using.
Yeah. We have actually, we did do like, there was a big festival, a hair care festival here called, Curly Treats as well. And we, you know, we went to that and, you know, along the way, we've done loads of things, reached out to people. The influencer thing, we looked at it early on, but we were like, we can't really afford it. So, but it's just been organic, to be honest. And I feel like a lot of it has just spoke for itself because it's just a product, which I think was just needed. And given that we just came through and we put something incredible down, it was always gonna work.
So what happened with the Olympic situation?
With that, I mean, again, that was like, for us, it was, let me run it back, actually. So we did a shoot. Right? We invited some customers to come for a
photo shoot?
A photo shoot, yeah. We were going to do a little photo shoot. And we invited some of our customers to come through and like, we wanted to do like a parent-child kind of shoot and stuff. And there was a woman who actually met us, who came across us at that Curly Treats Festival. And she had a daughter who's 8 years old called Anaya. And Anaya was swimming for her local county in London, like London Borough of Newham or something like that. And she was like, she bought the product for her daughter. And when we saw her at this photo shoot, she was like, I love my soul cap. I just love it. Like the swimming hat I had before just didn't work for me. Like my swimming lessons were disruptive. You know, the cap was always coming off. She had to get out of the pool to get someone to help her get her cap back on, all this. So when we spoke to her at that photo shoot, we were like, if she wants to keep swimming and keep training and get competitive and gets to a certain level, eventually there'll come a point where she has to use a competition-approved swimming cap, right? And we were like, okay, cool. We knew about like FINA. You had these like FINA-approved swimming
caps. FINA, what's it mean?
FINA is basically like the world governing body for swimming, essentially, right? So they're like the Olympic like world body. They decide, you know, if you want to use like competitive like swimwear, goggles, that kind of stuff, your product, it has to be FINA approved for you to compete.
They started bringing them up when Michael Phelps started breaking records. What technologies is he wearing that he's moving this fast? Everybody's just moving faster.
Exactly. That's it. So we were like, okay, cool. So same way with the swimsuits, they had to get approved by the committee. Swimming caps also have to be approved by the committee. So we were like, okay, cool. This young girl wants to keep using our product, but then she gets to a certain level where they say, okay, sorry, that product's not approved, so you can't use it. Then she would have to choose between that sport that she loves and like, you know, her hair or the cap that has worked for her. Mm-hmm. So we were like, actually, no, she shouldn't have to make that choice. Let's just apply it and let's get our caps approved. So me and Michael, like, we're really like methodical characters. So we went online, we looked at the FINA website, we looked at all the criteria for swimming caps to be approved, and we looked at him like, oh, that's fine, like our caps meet all the criteria, and so we were like, cool, let's just apply for the caps to be approved, like business as usual. We didn't really think anything of it. We didn't even think it was going to get, we just thought it was going to go through, pay the fee, cool, approved, keep it moving. And then obviously the initial response we had was that, you know, the swimming caps, you know, were not going to be considered or were not approved for use for the Olympics. So we were like, okay, that's kind of weird. Like, what's the reason, you know? And I think the reason said, yeah, like, the cap doesn't meet the natural form of the head.
That was the quote.
Yeah.
Literally the quote from FINA. Yeah. It did not match the natural form of the head.
Yeah. So, and then, and do you know what's nuts, actually? Do you know what's mad? Because we saw all the criteria. So that was one of the criteria. You know, one of the criteria is about the thickness, like the material, all this kind of stuff. And when I saw that the cap has to meet the natural form of the head, my interpretation was that, you know, you get like decorative swimming caps for like children with like shark fins and stuff like that. That was my interpretation. So I was thinking, oh, that's cool. Like, we don't have shark fins. We haven't got anything crazy. Like, you know, it's just like a swimming cap. Yeah, when we saw the natural form of the head criteria, we thought that it meant, okay, if your swimming cap has like shark fins, anything like that, that it wasn't going to be approved. Obviously, our caps don't have that. So then we went back to them and we said, you know, I think my feeling initially was just that they've probably only ever get applications from the big brands, the Nikes, Adidas, Head, Arena, like all the big guys. And they've heard like some brand called Soulcap coming through trying to apply. So they probably just thought like, just snub it or whatever. That was my initial feeling. And then, so I went back and we said, you know, how can we appeal the decision? How can we kind of just appeal that process, maybe have a conversation, explain to you what we're doing? And they basically come back and they said, okay, cool. You can't appeal because the application hasn't gone in front of the panel, approval panel. We're not actually going to even put that application forward because, you know, we don't basically, like, to me, it felt like they were just like, we don't want it. Like, so, so we couldn't appeal and they wouldn't approve it. So our hands were tied. We couldn't do anything. Do you get me? Like, what do you do in that situation? You can't appeal it. They're saying you can't run. So, okay, cool. So then that was when basically, you know, obviously then eventually like the story got out. And yeah, everyone had an uproar and we were overwhelmed. Like, we didn't even anticipate.
So how did it get out? How did the story get out?
So we had spoken to like a few kind of like journalists and stuff. And we were kind of just saying, you know, people would like Women's Health had reached out to us from before to do an interview with us. Like, we were, you know, featured on like the Independent, like we've been featured and we're getting a bit of press attraction. And then, when this thing happened, like, our brand manager like had a few contacts and she was just talking to this person. They were like, nah, like we need to get this story out. Like it's nuts. So, and we just thought, okay, cool. Like, you know, just run it. And it went nuts, man. We didn't anticipate the level of like people were just onto it, you know, yeah. And everyone was riding for us. And that's what like, we really appreciate the fact that people actually like rode out for us and people said, nah, like this ain't right. Cause we didn't think it was right. Mm-hmm. You know? And sometimes I think when you're in that situation, you can't tell whether maybe you're just like in too deep to see, you know, to see it. But I think with the reaction that kind of story got, it felt like, yeah, no, it was completely justified.
So Fina, after, this is like July, this is the Tokyo Games.
Yeah.
They apologized.
They apologized, yeah.
But did they lift the ban?
No. So essentially, because we still hadn't gone through that approval process, mm-hmm. we weren't approved for use, essentially. Okay. So I know the media kind of run the word ban and all that kind of stuff, but really, you know, the real fact of the matter was that they weren't allowed to be used because they weren't approved. Okay. Do you hear me?
Yeah.
So they have to be approved for use to go through. But obviously, like, you know, it's like the reporters, like,
yeah,
ban.
That's what sells. That's what sells.
Yeah. That's what sells, exactly. Yeah. So we never actually said our caps were banned. Yeah. We just said, you know, they weren't approved. Or they wouldn't be approved and they wouldn't be considered. But then, yeah, so... So then everyone went nuts. Obviously, I was on the phone with Brent Nowicki, who is like, you know, the chief CEO of Fina. You know, I was on a phone call with the you know, CEO of British Swimming. You know, we're all, the Black Swimming Association jumped on this call and we were all on it. And they were like, yo, Brent said, you know, to be honest with you, I'm sorry. Like, he'd actually had come in after... So he was actually new. So he'd come in after this decision was made and he saw the stuff blowing up about Soulcap and he was like, what's Soulcap? You know, who's Soulcap? What's going on? And he said he looked at the file and it wasn't clear to him why the application wasn't put forward. He was like, to be honest with you, it wasn't clear to me why it didn't get put forward. And, you know, I can only apologize for what happened. And, you know, to be fair, he was quite supportive. He was like, you know, we can work together. We can help you guys. Like, let's look at the situation. Let's see if we can get it approved. And currently we are actually going through
the process.
The process.
Okay.
So
I was about to ask, that was my next question. Like, where does it stand right now though?
Yeah. So as it stands now, I mean, we've been waiting for a little while, but
yeah.
I keep pushing them. Hopefully, I think we should get a response hopefully in the next couple of months.
3 more years to the next Olympics. Well, 2 more years to the next Summer Olympics.
Yeah, so we've got time. But then we've got the Commonwealth Games. There's other things
World,
going on.
World Games and all that.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Yeah, and, I mean, I read based on it, right? All the caps of silicone. They actually said that because you use more material, it actually might be a disadvantage for swimmers.
That's the thing. Like, we just wanted people to have the option.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We weren't saying that, yo, like, everyone's going to go and buy a soul cap and use that at the Olympics.
Right.
That wasn't what we were saying. But what we were saying is actually we wanted people, if you're a competitive swimmer, we wanted you to have the option, you know?
To have it, yeah.
Rather than you say, okay, cool, well, that's it. I either just quit swimming or I have to, like, just completely, like, forego my hair or anything like that. So we kind of wanted people, as they were progressing through them competitive ranks, as they were getting to them levels, to have the option.
And it makes sense, right? Like, I've been, like, if you watch swimming, you watch the Olympics,
yeah,
you start to notice that, like, most swimmers and they're wearing two caps.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, like, yo, if they're wearing two caps, obviously there's a size issue.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a issue with not keeping whatever your hair dry.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah. There's I mean, that's the thing. There's so many things, and it runs deep. Like, it does run deep when you sort of start going into it and stuff. You know, I think probably, I imagine the culture, maybe if you were to speak to most super competitive swimmers, the culture probably is you sacrifice whatever.
Like, you cut your hair.
You cut your hair.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's expected. You have to cut your hair. If you want to get to this level, you have to cut your hair. But I feel like still there may be points along the way, you know, Alice Dearen had said herself to me that she would say, oh, like, I feel like I've you know, got to sacrifice my hair. Do I want to keep doing it? Blah, blah, blah. And you can imagine for like a young person, especially when you just don't really see that many Black people swimming, you know, potential future Olympic greats out there who just don't think the sport's for them.
So how big can the, like, what's the largest size that you have?
Our largest size is a double XL. So if you've got dreadlocks.
If you've got
dreadlocks down to your back, like full on, like
big. Like a fit dreadlock to your back, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. Big, man. They're stretchy and, yeah, they're big.
So what's the scaling model like? What's the plans to actually take this to the point where it's moving millions of units a year? Like, what's your plan?
Yeah.
What's your vision?
Yeah. So for us, to be honest with you, what we think is we see ourselves as a swimming brand for everyone. You know, throughout our journey, we've always kind of wanted to support the community, you know, give money back, run like initiatives to get people, you know, at grassroots level into swimming, working with, you know, we've got cool guys like Tank Proof in the US who they offer free swimming lessons for children in disadvantaged areas. You know, we've worked with Swim Dem Crew in London. So we always want to give back, and we want to keep that community feel, make sure that we're always giving back to the community. But we want to be the best swim brand in the world, to be honest with you, man. So, you know, obviously, like, now I've got our own soulcap.com website.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're expanded our product range. So we've got, you know, swimming goggles are landing very soon. We've got merch, as you can see.
Towels.
We got the hair towels. We got body towels.
Goggles.
Swimming goggles are landing. We've got training aids as well. So like pool boys and kickboards. You know.
What about the suits? Swimsuits?
Well, that's the swimwear is the thing that's actually we're working on as well.
Okay.
Which we think is going to be our big ticket. And for us as well, the swimwear, we just want it to be like inclusive.
Yeah.
We want it to work. You know, work for everyone. We're going like plus size on the women, plus size on the men. We're going to have the small stuff. We're going to have kids stuff. And we're just really looking to expand and scale. But again, to be honest, it's all fully funded by ourselves. You know, yeah. We haven't got to that. We've not sat there and said, all right, cool, let's bring in some external capital. Let's bring in some equity to help scale things. So that's why it has to be managed at the same time, you know.
So after the ordeal with FINA, how was the business, right? Did we see obviously an increase in sales?
Yeah.
And were you guys prepared for that at the time?
No, we weren't at all. We weren't at all, to be honest with you. If we knew how big that story would have got, we would have made sure we were way more prepared. Mm. We weren't. We were, like, you know, we were selling out. Like, as fast as we could get this stuff in, it was going out. And, you know, to be fair, even for us, we realized our back office operations weren't good enough because we couldn't meet that demand. You know, some people had bought caps and they had to wait, like, you know, a few weeks before they were getting their orders and stuff. And for us, that, you know, that's not good enough. So we were telling people, yo, like, you know, if you're having any issues, reach us. You know, people's stuff was getting lost in the post. It was all mad, you know. So now, obviously, we're making sure that back-end processes are proper. We've got good partners, making sure that we can stay stocked, you know, keep everything in place to just essentially promote that growth. Yeah.
Has the supply chain, like, you get manufactured like China?
Yeah.
Has the supply chain issue affected you?
Yeah, it has. We've had a few moments, to be fair, man. Apparently, like, the price of raw silicone was going through the roof.
Mm.
So that was, like, obviously a big one. But, you know, when we have things like that, we make sure we don't want to pass that cost on to the customer if we don't have to. So we just absorb them kind of things, you know. But that's why I think now, if we diversify our product range, then hopefully, you know, we're not going to be so reliant on just the swimming caps. And to be honest, we're seeing that already, man. People are going on the website and they're buying, like, the hair towel. And the hair towel is crazy. For anyone who looks out, anyone who's into hair care, anything like that, if you want, get a Soul Cap hair towel, trust me.
What's a hair towel?
It's a microfiber hair towel.
Yeah.
But it's, like, different level.
That's good for the pool and the shower.
Yeah, trust me, different level. Any like, women who are into that hair care type stuff, if they swim and they do have their hair care wash day, use our hair towel. Trust me, it's crazy. Yeah.
Before, I mean, that's, like I said, that's great if you're swimming, or even if you're not swimming.
Yeah, yeah.
Because most times when women get their hair done, or prior to getting their hair done, they wash their hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And before they blow dry it,
yep,
they have the hair towel.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I got something.
Your goal to be like the Seiko.
Yeah, man. I think for us, we just want to be like a swimming brand for everyone. We want to be the go-to where, for example, you know, people who have previously felt excluded from the sport can say, actually, no, SoulCap is a brand that will represent us. They rep us. Do you know what I'm saying?
So let me ask you this. How has COVID, did COVID affect?
Yeah. COVID.
Couldn't get product.
Yeah, couldn't get product. Pools were closed.
And pools were closed also.
Yeah, it was hard, man. It was tough.
That's tough.
What are you going to do? Do you know what I mean?
So we just had to write out.
Yeah, when that happened, we went into defense mode. So we were like, for example, if we had plans to launch new products, you know, to start developing, you know, for example, a new website, all this kind of stuff, all that stuff just was on the back burner. You know, ad spend, for example. So if you're spending on ads and stuff like that, we had to scale it all back because we knew that, you know, cash was going to be king at that point.
So what's your biggest market? UK or America?
I think it's probably about 50% US, maybe like 40% UK, and then about 10% rest of the world.
Yeah.
So and we get orders from everywhere. It's nuts. We get orders from all over the world, and it's, you know.
This is a big business. So you guys are kind of like the little fish coming into this business at the time. Are there any sharks out there that's saying, you know what, we want to acquire you? Has that happened to you guys yet?
We have had some kind of people approach us in terms of, like, these are more like aggregator type companies. So you can get these companies that buy up brands that do well on Amazon and stuff like that. So a few of them have hit us up and they've been trying to hit us for acquisition. We've had, I don't know if you guys have heard of Dragon's Den. It's a bit like Shark. No. It's like a TV show called, like,
Shark Tank.
Shark Tank.
Yeah.
It's like a UK equivalent of that, and they've been on to us, man. They've been hitting us loads, saying, "I'll come through," like, you know, wanting us to go forward for the application process.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see that.
But yeah, I don't know, man. For us, we just feel like, okay, cool. Let's keep doing our thing. Let's keep pushing.
Yeah.
You know, we've had emails, people just emailing us saying, "Do you guys looking for, you know, investment and stuff like that?" People asking, like, "Where can we buy your stock?" Obviously, we're not listed on any stock market, but
so you're anti investment, right?
No, not anti. Definitely not. I think we just need to make sure the timing's right, I think with me and Michael, we want to push the value of the business as much as we can before we then start looking for that outside capital. And I think we're close to that point now. Mm. You know, like, things like product range is, like, relatively low hanging fruit. Like, we know how to launch sick products. Do you know what I mean? We know how to put together, like, great products and market them and put them out nicely. So we're thinking, cool, let's do what we're good at. And then when we get to that level where, okay, cool, we can start getting other people in, getting other people's expertise and stuff. Crowdcube is another one who've reached out to us. Is it Crowdcube? One of them. Kind of, you know, the websites where you can put up like a campaign and then people can subscribe and buy some shares in your company and stuff.
Like crowdfunding.
Yeah, like basically crowdfunding. Yeah, yeah. I think it's the company that hit us. Maybe it was Crowdcube, but yeah, like crowdfunding. And that's something that as well we thought, because it's a kind of community-based brand, that could be also a potentially good option as well. But yeah, so I think there's definitely exciting things to come. Yeah.
Yeah. So you obviously it's you and Michael.
Yeah.
But who else is part of the team to make sure that the execution is at its highest? Because even when you were talking about the deliveries, you said that's not good enough.
Yeah.
And so obviously it can't just be you two. So like who else? And
yeah,
when did you decide that we need to get these specific people to help us scale?
Yeah. So I mean, it was just me and Michael for quite a while, to be honest. My fiance. My now fiance, she's like worked in like fashion and stuff. So she's helped us massively with like on the photo shoot side, you know, making sure actually like the product looks really good.
I thought you did it.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say I did the first one and it was bad. It was really bad.
Smart man, get a good woman.
Yeah, so exactly. So she's helped. Then we were like, cool, let's get a brand manager in. So we found a brand manager who was sick. Like she got the brand really well and she helped like us push it. And then outside of that, it's just loads of freelancers, to be honest. So wherever, like, you know, we've got people who we can lean on for like copywriting, we've got people we can lean on who are specialists in like PPC advertising and you know, Google ads and that kind of stuff. You know, we lean out to designers when we need, you know, design work done and on packaging and that kind of stuff. So it's really lean. It's a lean team. Pretty much we got me, Michael, brand manager, and like there's like a government scheme now as well where you can get people in who are like, you know, young people who want experience and stuff. So we've leaned on a guy like who's we want to keep on now. He's a content creator and he does video and he's really good
for like social media.
Yeah, just like some social stuff.
TikTok.
We've not really ventured into TikTok, but Jax was telling me about. He said his TikTok's booming these days. So
TikTok's like, the wave.
Stuff like that, yeah.
TikTok's the wave. Definitely got to get on TikTok.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the goal? Like, when do you do this full time? Like, have you thought about that? Like, do you have a number that you need to hit before you? It's like, all right, this has to be doing this month, this much in revenue for me to leave the actuary world.
And just, you know what? I haven't got a number, to be honest. Like, I think for me, the reason why I didn't make that leap, and I could have done, but the reason why I decided not to is because I just felt like it puts more pressure on the business unnecessarily. I think as long as I'm able to, you know, fulfill my kind of duties in my 9-to-5 and also assist on the business, I will, because I feel like, okay, cool. If we could hire, you know, another person who's great at whatever, or it means we could accelerate the launch of our goggles or our website, then we should be doing those things rather than me coming in and say, cool, like, I got a mortgage to pay and I got a kid now. And mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the approach that I've taken to it, to be honest. And Michael's full-time. So Michael's been full-time.
Okay.
So Michael's full-time in the business. Obviously, we've got an office now as well. So we got people in there all the time. And then I'm just coming through like...
You know, it's good. Business. It's good to know for people to hear, because a lot of times people think that you can't do both, or you have to like... And like you said, you know, it puts a lot of pressure not only on the business, but on you personally too. Like, you know... If you know, just relying on just the business to make money for you to survive and live, then you might do things that you might not want to do.
Yeah.
But if you got that cushion of having, you know, just a job also,
yeah,
it takes less pressure off.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, it's one of these things. A lot of times people are scared to become entrepreneurs, but I tell people all the time, you can definitely do both.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have to just jump out the window and quit your job. You can manage both.
Yeah, exactly.
Prime example. I'm a prime example of that. And I started looking at it like my school district was my investor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Until I could own my own company.
Yes.
And so when you start thinking like that, it's like, yeah, you get paid every 2 weeks, but every 2 weeks is an investment. It's an investment. It's just a mindset thing.
That's it. Yeah. And I feel like for me personally as well, my feeling is that, you know, if obviously Michael was full time and we make sure that, okay, all the perks I get in my 9-to-5, so, you know, salary, pension, health cover, all that kind of stuff, we make sure Michael's getting that on from the business as well. Mm-hmm. Do you get me? And I think that's the beauty of it. And if things were to go left, and if, you know, things were to, you know, I don't know, not work out, they won't, touch wood. But, but you know, then at least even between us, I could say, yeah okay, cool. There's I've still got a job here and I can help support until he's, you know, would be at a point. Do you get me?
Yeah.
Where he's back on his feet or whatever. But and that's not going to happen. Like, trust me, he's a beast, man. I'm sad he couldn't be here today. But he's a beast.
Yeah, listen, it's all good. So what's the percentage of the products that you sell on Amazon versus a website?
I'd probably say now, like, we recently launched a new website recently, and we were on Squarespace before, using the Squarespace platform, which, like, it, you know, it's not built for commerce like that. So we've moved over to Shopify now.
Are you Shopify?
Yeah, we use Shopify, and like it's you know, it's taking things to the next level. And so I'd probably say it's probably around maybe like 30%, 40% Amazon and the rest on the website. So which obviously, you know, I'm happy. If it means a customer can get a product quicker from Amazon, do it. That's fine. So long as the customer is happy, the customer can get the product. You know, Amazon is really good in that, in from that regard. If we wanted to launch in a new market, say for example, Amazon, you know, they've set up Amazon Australia now. And for us to get either, you get this kind of weird spot when you're in e-commerce. So it's like, you either get like a fulfillment center, like a warehouse or something in the country or like in the region, which you want to be in. But you have to kind of be doing enough, getting enough traction there already to do that. So if we wanted to sell to someone to Australia, cool, they can buy it direct from our website now, and they might just have to wait because it will come from London probably. Or if we're set up on Amazon Australia, we can just send our product into the warehouses there, and people have got like next day access to our products through that.
So I was going to ask you, so your products, where are your products kept now? In your warehouse?
Yeah. So we've
got a third party warehouse, or you got your own?
So yeah, so in London, we've got an office, a studio, like a photography studio as well, and storage in that unit. So we hold a lot of stuff there. But we also hold stock in Amazon UK, Europe, and US.
So Amazon Center.
Yeah, so we've got Amazon fulfillment centers, but we also got a third party logistics company as well.
So you do like three different types of stuff.
Yeah. So what we'll do typically is like we'll say, you know, with Amazon now as well, they can be a bit funny with like inventory limits, like how much you can store in their warehouses and stuff. So we might send our product to our third party partner in the USA, and then cool, if we think we're running down on a bit, we'll get them to ship a few boxes over to Amazon, and then Amazon will fulfill the orders to the customer.
You said earlier that you have community give backs.
Yeah.
And partnerships with, I'm assuming, community centers.
Yeah.
Is part of that the giveaway of the caps? Because I can see, especially schools where it's predominantly black or women or men of color, having that as the official cap of the team or the school. Now you have contracts with school districts, universities, and eventually, like, I could see countries.
Yeah.
Right, where you're the official brand of the country.
Definitely. That's the hope and that's the plan, to be honest. Already, like, there are swimming clubs, just like small clubs, or like, you know, affiliates, where we'll just give them the caps for free and just say, yeah, like, you know, do your thing, like, you know, give them to people who need them and stuff. You know, obviously, like, financial donations as well, where we can, we'll donate to some of these kind of non-profit organizations to help push what they're doing. And it just builds the community, builds the brand. And I feel like we feel it's our duty to not just sit there and say we're an inclusive brand and we're for everyone, but then we're not actually putting our money where our mouth is and actually like backing that and supporting it. So, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I just have one last question about this fulfillment. So can you just explain that to me again? So you have a fulfillment center in America.
Yeah.
But they're not actually sending they're just actually, when the order gets made, it gets to the fulfillment center, and then the fulfillment center sends it to Amazon.
No, so basically, sorry, what I meant was, okay, if we've got like a logistic company in America, so if we get an order for our website, say, for example, then they could fulfill that order directly to the customer.
Directly, yeah, right.
But then obviously, if we were like, okay, cool, we need to get product to Amazon because we're running low.
They have enough product where they can send it to Amazon.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll have a setup where they might be able to just send a box over to plug the gap and stuff.
You just buy in bulk.
Yeah,
buy like, you know, 3,000 caps.
I mean, yeah, I think last year we'd ordered like 52,000 caps.
52,000 caps,
for example.
You keep some in UK in your spot that you can send out yourself in the UK. Yeah. Some in America for the American customers, and then you send Amazon whenever they need it.
Yeah, exactly.
You just check the numbers to see you're running low.
Essentially, but that's one of the hardest parts as well. Of managing the business.
Running the logistics.
The logistics.
Who does that?
Michael predominantly.
Does that?
He's the guy. But to be honest with you, man, that's, you know, I've been speaking to other e-com guys, you know, that I've met just through like communities and stuff. And everyone seems to be having the same issue where it's like, cool, getting the stock in and getting it back out is such a challenge for everyone. And when we've got 8 different colors now across, you know, 5 different sizes, And now we've got a bunch of other products, and it's a bit of a juggling act.
Managing everything.
Yeah,
managing. You're running low here.
This
isn't selling.
Let's cut this down. Exactly.
We're not putting that line pink out anymore.
That's stuff that nobody thinks about. Even with us, like for our merch, it's like, all right, the T-shirts always do good. A hoodie might do good, but one color might not do good. The crew neck might not. You got to know, because you don't want to just have a bunch of random stuff that's not selling.
Exactly.
Then you got to do flash sales to try to get rid of it.
Yeah.
You do Black Friday sales?
We haven't yet. We haven't yet. But I think next year is going to be this year even, will be our first proper Black Friday, I think. Yeah, we've never done one. We never really have done flash sales or anything like that. But I think it's probably something that we will look to do.
You have a high ticket cost item?
High cost item. Well, I think when we hit the swimwear, that will probably be like
bathing suits?
Bathing suits.
Those are pricey.
Looking at kind of like, things like wetsuits and stuff. You can't really get, people struggle with getting wetsuits for bigger sizes and stuff.
It's true.
You know, the merch is like, we want to do everything nice. So like, this is like organic cotton, want to do nice stuff. So the price points, they're not crazy, like for what we have to pay for them, but it's probably a higher price point. In general, but for what it is, it's not crazy compared to.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Nah, man, it's dope, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate you taking the time to come sit with us.
Nah, I appreciate you guys.
Everybody, go support. How can they purchase? Talk about the social media, the website, all of that stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So the social media is SoulCap Official. The website is soulcap.com. You can go through there. That's where you can get the product. So check out our stuff, check out our socials. Yeah, appreciate that.
Support the Black entrepreneurs. Yeah.
You might have solved a problem in my household. So
how is the vibe with Black entrepreneurship community in the UK and London?
It's great. It's great, I think. Like, to be honest with you, I've recently just had a kid, so I'm not like I'm not like out and active and that kind of stuff. So and like with the 9-to-5 and the business, like obviously I'm mad busy. But for me, like I always just want to connect with people. I always, if I see people who have got businesses who are doing stuff, I'll always be like, yeah, cool, let me support, share, buy their product. Do you know what I'm saying? I always want to support, not even just Black man, any entrepreneurs where people are trying to do stuff, people are trying to do good things as well. Like, definitely always want to support that. So, yeah.
Vibes. Troy, housekeeping item?
Yeah, man. Shout out to everybody across the world. All our earners everywhere, man. We are indebted to you. Y'all have spread the word. Y'all told a friend to tell a friend. That's why we're able to do things like this, come to the UK, go to Lagos, Nigeria, Egypt, Jamaica. It's because of all the support that y'all have been giving us. So shout out to y'all. And shout out to SoulCap. I will definitely be getting a few. Keep rocking with a shout out to everybody that's purchased all our merch. Obviously, we spoke about it here. Man, love is love.
Yeah, shout out to my guy Jax again. Shout out to Tape London for facilitating us in the hospitality.
And shout out to LaArc. We can shout them out.
Yeah, shout out to LaArc in Paris.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.